Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, faster, freaker, down. Start tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for May 26, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box to sponsor this podcast. You can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, I feel like these shows, and especially when it lands like this on the calendar, the Sapporo triple header weekend always kind of looms ominously on the schedule, knowing that it's three network shows in 3 days. And for the promotion itself, it's like the roughest stretch that they have for out the calendar year, essentially going from Kanto up through into Hokkaido, doing the three shows there, doing another show of Hakodate with Katsuo, and then coming back down. But it's a little bit of the Dragon Gate version of the Canadian Death Tours. But I have to say, for us, Case, I feel like that this, it creates a Death Tour like episode for us when we have to review these Sapporo triple shots or these Sapporo triple headers coming onto the show the next week afterwards. But how are you doing, bud?
I would say that 2026 has been its own Death Tour. I think these shows are harder to break down when there's a bunch of stuff that I am dying to talk about on these triple headers, because then you got to make time for stuff and how we're going to lay out this and what do you want to do here. I don't know. It's a pretty easy show for me to put together this week. There's a handful of things that made an impression on me, some good, some bad, but I'm blown away that we're 2 months out from Kobe World and we're sitting with the promotion that we currently have.
Yeah, so let's take this episode, because like the last few weeks, at least on the feed, we have bounced around between having the J episode to doing those days, if you're listening to this, at least chronologically, on the feed. And let's center ourselves for where the company is looking at Kobe World on July 20th, because you're absolutely right. We are 7 weeks away, essentially. We have the Korkin shows coming up in June that we have most of full cards for, but afterwards we're getting to a point where the network time and the time to get shows on the roads and the plate spending is well past happening, and we are at a point, at least for me, all these days out from Kobe World, and just looking around at this, and there's just big nebulous questions going on what the direction of the promotion is going to be going into Kobe World. And there's nothing really coming out of the Sapporo triple header that gives you any sort of confidence in any sort of direction other than, okay, Madoka Kakuta, although it took four ref distraction attacks to put him down. He did definitively beat Ryoya Tanaka in a match over these three shows, and I guess that can maybe negate some direction, but we're completely adrift now, less than 2 months out from the biggest show of the year.
There's really nothing that I am super emotionally invested in at this point. I think the Twin Gate scene is going to get really, really messy as we head into World, and I think they're going to end up in a direction that I don't necessarily care for. The Triangle Gate scene, you know, we had, for lack of a better term, I mean, an abortion in Okinawa that I still can't really believe, and we're going to have the fallout of that somewhere. I am, at this point, more interested in Tanaka breaking the record at World, maybe defending the belt once or twice in August and September, and then losing to Homare. That is sort of the thread that I am holding on to right now, is I think the best way to land all of those planes that are in the air is Tanaka versus Dragon Kid at World. And then I would let him have another defense or two. If you're going to break Pac's record, why would you stop after the one defense? Let him have another one.
We still haven't had him versus Flamita yet.
No, they did Flamita in the fall.
Oh, they did Flamita in the fall.
I had to remind myself of that as well. I was going to come on and make the same point, and then I looked it up.
Thank you. Let me mark out three lines of notes that I have on that Twitch show from the 23rd because of that. the one thing that we kind of have any sort of bearing towards is the idea that Tanaka has the 11th Dream Brave Gate defense coming up against Naruki Doi during this doubleheader, and then everyone assumes his fight card then goes to 12 at Kobe World, and really that's the only thing that there's any sort of direction whatsoever. After you break the record, they should still have another Flamita match, guys. Like, frankly, they should do Flamita again. It's preposterous why you wouldn't at this point, given the weekend that Flamita had coming back into the promotion in 2026. But this is
a promotion that is largely allergic to doing rematches during title reigns, which I don't really understand.
That's not a Ryo Saito thing. Yeah, that's not a Ryo Saito thing. That's just how this promotion has operated forever, though, is you basically get one shot at the champion. And unless you have a different pairing in like a Twin and Triangle Gate scenarios, if it's Dream or Brave, unless it's like the Shima Royale 15 key situation, you're not revisiting anyone.
So they've done a Moshi match. That's off the table. I apologize if this is messy radio, but I want to dive into this just momentarily. But they've done a Mochi match, they've done a Kame match, they've done a Fuda match, a Flamita match, Billy King Kid's not going to come back, Rita, Genki, Jason Lee, Yuti. So that still leaves Gucci on the table. That still leaves a Flamita rematch if they want it. That still leaves Dragon Kid. That still leaves Kagatora. They are doing Naruki Doi. That leaves Hyo still on the table. And that leaves, I think that's, well, and then Homare. So, yeah, I mean, even with first time ever matchups, they still have quite a bit of runway. And I would exhaust all of those matchups. I would leave no stone unturned. I think you have to do a Gucci match at some point. I think you have to do a Hyo match at some point. And then you can pass the belt off to Homare. That's really the only thing when I look at the lay of the land right now. That is the only thing that I really, really care about, because I think that would be beneficial to Tanaka. I think that'd be beneficial to Homare. You could almost do the same story you did with Shima into Shingo with the Dreamgate belt, where Homare doesn't have to lose in his first defense, but he can lose very quickly just to sort of break the pressure of having to follow that Tanaka reign. And then you've elevated Tanaka, and then Homare at that point has his Brave Gate belt. He can move on from there.
Yeah, no, and I feel like that outside of that, when you look at the title pictures going into Kobe World and really going into the month of June of itself, and it's two really huge open questions. And the first one, I think, because this one does not have as much ramifications for the shows that happen in Sapporo, it's worth getting into. Natural Vibes are no longer the Open the Triangle Gate champions. The current Open the Triangle Gate champions are a trio that they lost the belts to over in Okinawa there. Teal'c and Sisa, Tirami Saber, and Gherkin Mask won the Triangle Gate championships during the Okinawa stint. And they have a defense lined up against the Poseidon group when the next time that I think that they go on stream. So the titles are no longer on Gucci and Aki. They're on three Okinawa Pro regulars and one that's retiring on the show that this title defense is happening at on the 7th.
I don't even know where to begin with that one. We can get into it now. I don't know. I know this show's going all over the place. I don't really know how to break down this promotion at this current moment in time.
This is going to be one of those all over the place kind of shows, to be fair.
Which I don't necessarily like doing, but I think we're going to have to. So the Triangle Gate belts were lost to a Ryukyu Dragon team on an untelevised show in Okinawa. It has now been, I think, a week and a half since that match has happened. So There's no chance we're going to get the footage. It looks like it might bounce to another Ryukyu Dragon team with a wrestler that is retiring, which then I think would mean the belts would be vacant.
The current champion team has the retiring wrestler on it, Teal'c.
Gotcha. So there's a chance that they have either, the two options here are they successfully defend and then vacate the belts, or they lose the titles, and then we just have another Ryukyu Dragon team with those titles, which doesn't do anybody any good. Again, we're 2 months out from Kobe World, and this is what they're doing with these titles now. So I get the feeling that heading into World, the Triangle Gate belts are going to be vacant, and There is a chance that we either do what we did in 2018, where we do sort of a mini one-night tournament just to get guys on the card. There's a chance that we have a decision match between two teams, whoever they may be. I'm sure they won't be built up well because it's the Triangle Gate belts. I don't really know what's in play for these, but all I know is that we had a Natural Vibes reign that I thought was really interesting. It was really beneficial for Gucci and Aki, and it ended on an untelevised match to a regional indie promotion, which I just sort of can't believe.
Yeah, and we're used to the relationship between Dragon Gate and Ryukyu Dragon pro wrestling be that there has been a level of give and take. I mean, essentially, Dragon Gate has taken the belts from this promotion. They have been on Dragon Gate people essentially for like 3 or 4 years. They've been off and on this situation, and there has been a series of title defenses over the Dragon Gate belts in Okinawa over this time period. But I think taking it from like the stance of, all right, with this, like Aki and Gucci, who have grown that have really grown in this title reign, and especially Aki over the last 6 weeks, that's it for them. And that's a bummer. It does kind of remind me of when Jackie Kamei and UT got the Triangle Gate belts for like 3 days back when they joined Natural Vibes. Like it does have a little bit of air of that, but it for one just completely prohibits that level of development there. And then I mean, like, do we really need to have a Perros del Mal de Japón situation happen with these belts, like basically for the second time in a 6 year time period around the biggest show of the year? Like, it just feels like, really, this is what you're trying to do right now? Like, with all these other problems, you just decide to create a whole entire new problem within the promotion. And it's wild. It's really kind of wild, the idea that this happens. And I know that there's like a deeper relationship with Dragon Gate and Ryukyu Dragon Pro Wrestling, to be fair. But I don't know. I don't see how this serves anyone, guys.
Well, I'm uninterested in exploring that relationship at this exact time and place. I don't think this is when that relationship needs to be explored.
No. That's not what you do when your promotion is going through it right now, is drop the belts over to another promotion onto a team that is only going to exist for 2 weeks and then being dropped to a likely a trio that has Punch the Monaco on it, you know?
I had made the point back to you. This was coming off of, this must have been in March, because the February Corkin was not good, and then the March Corkin was not good. And I made the point to you. I go, well, let's take a breather here. Sometimes this promotion just doesn't click, but it takes one show to change that momentum, and it takes one show to get right back on a roll. And we're now at a point where, you know, January just feels like such a distant past. It is unbelievable when you look at those January cards and all of the things that they could do and all of the things that we were excited about. And granted, a lot of that was tied to Shimizu, who got hurt. That's not his fault. And that's not the promotion's fault. But we've also now passed the threshold of, you know, anything post Golden Coliseum, I don't want to hear Shimizu as the excuse for why things didn't work out in a certain way. So we're now in this stretch, February, March, April, May. Even if you and I liked a lot of the things on Golden Coliseum, we're in, I think, what is a historically rough stretch. And I was trying to think about the other stretches of this promotion that are like this. And the one that really comes to mind is actually not directly after the OWE split when Shima left in May, but sort of that January, February, March, April, May 2018
that I thought was really rough. December and November 2017.
You're right.
The feeling was
you're exactly right. Those have to be lumped in there. And the thing that I always go back to is that Champion Gate in 2018, where yes, you had Mochizuki versus Benkei, which might have ended up even being like a top 10 match for me that year, certainly a top 10 Dragon Gate match, but you also had Kanda versus Punch for the Brave Gate belt and just a bunch of other stuff that was really awful and off-putting. And you're right, that would start at the end of 2017 and then sort of go through Dead or Alive, and then I think King of Gate with the actual new fresh start of the company sort of acted as a new fresh start creatively. That has always, to me, been the, like, hey, this is the worst stretch of Dragon Gate there is. I am now wondering if this rivals that to any degree. I'm a little alarmed, you know, as I was watching Double or Nothing a few days ago, when I was looking at how many AEW matches I have at 4 stars or higher this year, and just how many more it is compared to Dragon Gate. And we're almost halfway through the year now, and there are down Dragon Gate years where I have 40 to 45 4+ star matches, and maybe a lot of those are on the lower end. There's only a handful that are on the 4¾, 4.5 star side, but they're still there. But outside of that Twin Gate match from Golden Coliseum, I'm not getting any of the high end stuff, and I'm not even really getting a lot of the low end stuff. There's not a single match during these three shows that I would notebook with.
Yeah, there was a lot of threatening 3.5 star, I would say, on these shows, but like, it just, like, really for me, this, like, whole, like, weekend, and that case that made me pull up my watch list that I do some people ask me for my watch list, and I still do watch lists. I don't do them very often. I don't really publicize it, but my Dragon Gate one, and April does not change it this much. I still have to update it from April to May. I'm only on the third page. And I'm just using standard text and spacing and all of that. And it's matches that are 3.5 stars or higher on it. Just things that are very good and worth going out of your way for. I contrast that to any other year. And I feel like at this time, I'm already at a point thinking, like, do I need to make this list be like searchable so you can hit February and it shoots you down to February 4 pages down, or shoots you down to August? That's not even really kind of a thing at this point. This is at least for me, match wise, it is one of the lower years. And frankly, what do you do in one of your lower years when you're being creatively bankrupt and everything that you could try to do to kickstart, you're deciding not to do? You take the belts off the one thing that has been consistently the best act on your shows for the last 18 months. And you, after not having them really be very competitive champions, the amount of like Jackie Rita stuff that like shows up on it, like the one belt that consistently shows up on my list is Twin. And when you contrast that with all the other title matches that are happening, and you contrast that with what they have been doing up and down the card, you're just kind of going like, is this really that you're not confident in this promotion's direction whatsoever. And yeah, at least 2017 to 2018, we can now look back with almost a decade of hindsight and everything and go like, oh, there were a lot of reasons for that. But like at this point, like it really goes to one person, and it goes to Ryo Saito and his booking, I feel like.
It's a really poorly booked promotion right now, and it's a thing that I think plagues all of Japan, at least all the men's promotions in Japan. A lot of the heel stuff that's happening right now, and I'm not the first person to make this point, but a lot of the heel stuff that's happening right now would not feel as bad, would not be as daunting, if there was a very clear path to, okay, well, once so-and-so dethrones him, this will all be better. And I thought that was going to be Yoshioka in February, and that's why my tolerance has turned into nothing for this heel unit ever since then, because now I feel like we're just belaboring the point, and it's a point that I'm not really interested in seeing to the end. You know, now it's just a thing that I'm entirely uninterested in altogether. It is no truer sentence by you has ever been more accurate than the tone and the pulse of this promotion runs through how good the heel unit is at any given time. And I think when you have a really poor heel unit, and I think it's a really poor heel unit, the entire promotion suffers as a result.
Yeah, and it's like on these shows, so the Triangle Gate title is just a giant question mark. It feels like they're doing Perros del Mal de Japón all over again, and you don't have like the Noah connection with it. Looking over to the twin situation on the 23rd, there was a double title open the twin gate, Ryukyu Dragon Soryo tag team title match, Jackie Rita versus Team 204. And that finish, Case, I had to write down and I had to start doing notches on the amount of times they kept on pulling Kachi-san. When we talked about ref pulls and the issues with like ref pulls in this promotion, there were four back-to-back-to-back spots that were ref pulls going into the finishing stretch that allowed Team 204 to become the next open the twin gate and Soryo tag team champions. It was the actual fall was a the Caldari Luna after the Jinchu, but it was also after a time where they pulled the ref for not just one spot, not just the powder attack, not just the box attack, not like this. Like when things hit, it's supposed to be boom, 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 but it's then doing another one and a cookie sheet just to further cement the point that Jackie Rita are firmly, at least in this promotion's booking wise, considered the bottom tag team in this hierarchy when they have been the 2025 and 2026 tag team of the year. It is a fucking demoralizing way to end your shows, and really for like the people that are not into the promotion at this time that would be able to grasp onto Jackie Rita as, you know, Case, something that is to look forward to on each card is holy shit, these Love and Peace guys, when you let them wrestle and you actually book them to win, it works. And instead you have to kind of piss all over that, and Team 204 is likely going to become triple tag team champions just to walk back into All Japan and to drop the belts over there, the belts they picked up that have been on Genki Mania for the last few weeks. And it's just frustrating, Case, because it's so demoralizing to have a finish like that to cap a reign that has been so frustrating, in that it should have been going down there with Yamadoi as like one of the all-time great tag team runs, CK1, all the like great all-time twin gate runs, but instead the promotion is just like willingly say like, oh yeah, you can't have that, you have to deal with this instead. And it's just utterly demoralizing from a promotion that for 28 years at least, Case, did not feel like the need to insult its viewers and its fans to this level of derision.
It's really bad. It's really, really bad. I think one of the things that blows me away is like, why can't Ishin and Kato just beat those guys clean if they're better? That's fine if they're better, but
they're much bigger than them. They should be throwing them around and beating them clean as a whistle.
But it goes for every Gacha Dokoro match where they don't they don't ever win clean. And that's what I don't get, is if you're just going to have a mid-card match with those guys, or even, you know, a main event title match, just have them beat a guy every once in a while. That's where it confuses me, because that feels
how
like a very
WWE thing.
How much
further cemented would it be for Kakuta if he would have beaten Tanaka clean? And it just would have been like, guess what? I'm the top champ. Fuck you. You're the
but the thing with that is, like, I don't even feel like that's going to go anywhere. It's going to lead to another Kakuta Yoshioka match, which I still think is the Kobe World main event.
I mean, I guess, man. I mean,
who else?
I mean, the vague Minoru face turn that's happening that I've felt through the ether for the last 3 months, Case, it's happening. And I think we have to accept the fact that this time they're actually going to really try Kota Minoru into Kobe World. I really think that we just have to prepare ourselves for that.
So let's talk about this Minoru thing, because we've sort of glossed over the entire weekend. I want to go into winners and losers of the weekend, because
Let's get focused.
I want to talk about this Minoru thing real quick, and then we can get into winners and losers, because I think this is important to note that, you know, on the final show of these three, and I guess I also want to note real quick, I'm going to interrupt my own point, but I've been meaning to say this since we started. These specific Hokkaido triple shots in May, I thought worked really, really well with the old King of Gate schedule, where you were able to build to one, if not two, big KZ singles matches during this triple shot. Not having King of Gate in the spring and early summer, I think, is a real detriment to these shows. I really miss them not being here. Did you also feel that way?
Oh, yeah, because there was, like, no focus to it. And, like, the one thing that was kind of promoted on these shows were these exhibition matches for these two rookies that can't make the main show. And they have KZ involved in that. So that's what they decide to focus these shows on, instead of having, you know, a perfect place to run through a lot of tournament stuff. Because remember, like, you had stuff like that great Yamato versus Hyo match during those triple shots, and
you
that's
had a Jason Lee KZ match that I still think about. How great that match was.
You're absolutely right.
These were three shows that, outside of this Kota Minoru angle, which even then it's debatable on what necessarily it accomplished, but these were three shows that took place in a big market that were televised on the Dragon Gate Network. And I would say that these shows largely accomplished nothing. And I was so taken aback when I saw the cards for these, where I was like, oh, there's not, like, I mean, Flamita coming back is great. I thought Flamita was awesome. But there's not even really a through line on these shows. Like,
no,
these are really weak cards, and they don't have to be, because they had, you know, other than Masaaki Mochizuki, who was out with an injury, he comes back, you know, today as of the time we're recording this, you know.
Yeah, he had kidney stone surgery.
Yes. You know, otherwise, they had the full roster. They had Fuda there. They had Cielo there. They had Junior there. You know, they had Ultimo
Junior's
there.
Back,
they could,
yeah.
They could have done a lot with these. I mean, other than Ben, who's out with injury. But, you know how it is with this tour. Sometimes not everybody makes the trip. But anybody made the trip for this.
Ben decided his second Hyo during Best of the Super Juniors last weekend. So he was doing stuff, and he was on camera, like, helping out in a way.
Yes.
Just for information.
But just wildly unproductive shows, and the one thing that I guess you can take away going forward, outside of, yes, we have new Twin Gate champions, which, again, I think is really just a lateral move that will put this promotion in a rock and a hard place, where they either will beat Ishin and Kato with the old guys, and then the old guys will lose at All Japan and nobody will care, or Ishin and Kato will beat the old guys and then they will lose in All Japan. So it is just a complete lose-lose situation.
Your
no matter
Twin
where
Gate
you
champions
go.
Are going to lose in another promotion because you booked it this way.
Or they'll lose to Genki and Kanda, which is a very realistic possibility.
Right. So your Twin Gate champions, again, are losing in a situation. Like, by booking this title switch, they have now somehow fated the Twin Gate champions to look bad in the future.
So, on the third night, there's an 8-man tag. This is the semi-main event, mind you. This is Genki Horiguchi, Luis Monte, Ultimo Dragon, and Yasushi Kanda versus Ishin, Jason Lee, Kota Minoru, and Yoshiki Kato. It is a 4-minute semi-main event that ends when Kota Minoru deliberately spits water in the face of Ishin instead of Genki Horiguchi. Horiguchi then hits Ishin with the backslide and wins. You can make the argument that, okay, well, they're building up towards Genki and Kanda versus Ishin and Kato, which I, you know, from a technical sense is correct.
We yes, agreed, that is happening.
Yeah, that is, you know, that is in theory what they were doing there. And that will lead us to one of the two Cork and Hall shows that we have coming up at the end of next week and booked for the 5th, as the 4th only has 28 matches of the Tiger Mask.
It's booked on the 4th. It's booked on the 4th.
No, it's not. The 5th is the 28 match. I'm sorry, the 4th is the 28 match. The 5th is Kakuta, Minoru.
All Asia tag match. Just, yeah.
You're right. Thank you.
Sorry.
The 5th is Kakuta, Minoru, and Jason Lee versus Kai, Ishin, and Yoshiki Kato. It's weird that they're doing a Gaja Dokuro Explodes match on the same show that they're doing a History of Natural Vibes 10-man. You're going to get two unit versus, like, same unit matches on one show, which I think is really, really strange. But you're now at a point where we're gonna see something big happen here. This is in Cork, and again, it's Kakuta, Minoru, and Lee versus Kai, Ishin, and Kato. 6-man tag with the implication that either Minoru is going to get kicked out or Minoru and Jason are going to get kicked out. I think what intrigues me about this is that they're doing this 6-man at the Korakuen and not at the Sambo Hall show on the 31st, which means that I think they're going to have Minoru and Lee or Minoru and Yoshioka. I get the sense that that is the Kobe World Twin Gate program, and that Minoru might be pulled away from the Dreamgate situation in Kobe.
Yeah, because it does feel like that the obvious endpoint is Yoshioka and Minoru are going to be whatever that the next unit coming out of all this is going to be with those two. And then Tanaka goes in his own direction, right? Like, it ties into that a little bit, would you say?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm hung up on the Minoru aspect of this where...
Sure.
I guess my pushback towards, oh, well, it's going to be Minoru versus Kakuta at World, when the entire Minoru story has been Minoru and Ishin going at it, that goes back to the Golden Coliseum build. So it would make sense that, you know, tag team specialist Kota Minoru would want to have a tag team partner to go after the Twin Gate belts. He's on Kakuta's side in this match, and... You know, yes, he can eat a lariat and then we're off to the races. But the story hasn't been Minoru has been fucking up Kakuta's thing. The story has been Minoru has been fucking up Ishin's thing. So if they go in that route, I still think it's a poor story.
You can get to Ishin. You have enough time on TV with the July Korakuen to do the Ishin match and have that checkpoint and then clear the road for Kota Minoru and Madoka Kakuta at World. I don't think that it has to be seen in only a tag team kind of context here. I think that you wouldn't want to... I don't think Jason's leaving because that leaves Gacha Dokuro at 4, which that's not good for a heel unit, regardless of how bad Gacha Dokuro is. Like, you, the that's when things get real wonky. I think that you have the amount of TV and the amount of runway that you're going to be able to... In a way, like, I get the Yoshioka and Minoru pool and making that into like a tag team kind of thing, because that does solve kind of that does kind of solve both of their problem, but it does leave Kakuta kind of out in a nebulous area of what you do with the Dreamgate at that point. But I just think that it's a lot cleaner with Minoru getting turned on the 5th, and then you do the checkpoint match at the next Korakuen, and then you're okay to go 3 weeks later at Kobe World.
It then raises a tough question. If you do that, and we have no feel for if there are going to be any outsiders on World this year and who those outsiders would be, but if you end up doing Kakuta versus Minoru, Tanaka is going to be busy. I mean, what the hell do you do with Yoshioka on that show? I saw somebody in the Discord today. I don't remember who this was. I'm not gonna look right next. I don't want to get distracted. But somebody in the Discord today put a proposed Kobe World card in the Drangate channel. And it was sensible and logical and looked intriguing. The undercard, there, he had a singles match with Yoshioka and Ben. And I thought, God, that feels like that would be the coldest undercard singles match that could possibly, that match would be wrestled to silence. Just a special singles match, class of 2016 anniversary special, Yoshioka versus Ben in match four. That just sounds like a cold crowd if there's ever been one.
Yeah, like, I really don't know what you do with Yoshioka if he's not in the Dreamgate scenario. Like, that Ben match, I guess you can kind of do it, but it does feel like that Hyo bugged Ryo Saito enough to do a class of 2016 tag match. He's like, okay, we've done the class of 2016 thing. Now I need to go back to making sure Ginki Horiguchi's booked like Antonio Inoki. I don't know if they're going to revisit that, but it is the situation of, like, you can't do another, like, real outsider because you've already done, like, you had him against Tanahashi last year at Kobe World in that tag match. So,
but I don't think that's going to stop them from putting him with an outsider again.
I just don't know, like, unless literally the outsider is Shima, I don't know who you would do this, and you would not do Shima.
No, it would be like Masato Tanaka, but it doesn't, I mean, he's not over, so it doesn't matter. You know, Yoshioka's irrelevant in the same way that Strong Machine J is irrelevant, in the same way that Yamato's been giving nothing to do, so he's irrelevant now. It doesn't matter.
No, I am real, like, confused with why they've put themselves in this position. You know, like, I'm like, why are we having these conversations when they've just made it so hard on themselves for no reason whatsoever?
I am really getting the sense that Jackie and Rita are not going to be in a featured match at World this year. I think they will.
I don't think so.
I'm thinking they will be in an 8-man tag to open up the show, which I can't even comprehend on, like, a moral level. Like, how dare
Junior,
that atrocity?
Well, I mean, Junior's going to need to tag with someone so he can lose in a match. So, yeah, you know.
But depending on what they do with the Triangle Gate, you know, we'll see where Ben is at. But again, I think Tanaka versus DK is the direction. So if it's not Tanaka versus Hyo, I think you can have a Triangle Gate Love and Peace team, but it's Hyo, Ben, and Junior, the Triangle Gate team that was already Triangle Gate champions. I think you can put those guys in whatever, and then Jackie and Rita can be in an opening 8-man.
Yeah, it's real depressing.
I think that's the route we're going down. So winners and losers from the Hokkaido shows, as we just sort of did a smattering of all these Dragon Gate things. I mean, I don't know. Let me ask you this. Do you have any big match recommendations from the weekend?
I mean, Flamita being back made things, at least in theory, feel a little better. I really liked UT and Flamita versus Monte and Cielo from night two. I really did. And it was like, I feel like that Cielo felt like that when he was in the ring of Flamita, that he was able to go at full speed. At times we don't see him go as fast as he does in that. I thought that was a lot of fun, that tag match. And if I'm going to say who is a winner, who are winners of the weekend, just because of how they looked in these kinds of matches, I would pick both Flamita and Cielo as winners of the weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Just in terms of, I guess, I don't know if I want to give spoiler-free match recommendations, but I really like Gucci and UT versus Cielo and Fuda on the first night, and that main event of Flamita KZ and Strong Machine J versus Tanaka Yoshioka and not a member of D-Courage, Luis Monte. On the second show, Tanaka and Yoshioka versus Homare and Kimura, Fuda versus Mochizuki Jr., and Cielo and Monte versus Flamita and UT. I guess I would recommend the Twin Gate match as well. I mean, night two, I thought, was clearly the best of the three nights. It's the only Kame Rita match I didn't go notebook on during this title reign, but I it was not bad by any means.
It probably, if they didn't have the insulting closing stretch, probably would have eked out four for me.
Yes. And then night three, I really liked, again, the opening match, Aki, Gucci, and UT versus Homare, Kimura, and Fuda. And then Cielo versus Mochizuki Jr. on that show. I thought that was the weaker of the main events on that. The Flamita, KZ, Strong Machine J versus Hulk, Dragon Kid, and Yamato match you can skip, in my opinion. So, you know, a handful of polite matches that were worth people's times, maybe. I really liked the undercard on a lot of these. I liked the opening match on every single night. But it's tough. You know, this is three shows and a lot of matches, and I didn't really love any of them. So again, hit me with it one more time. I know you said it, but just to reiterate your point, I have three winners and losers each. Who were your winners and losers for the weekend?
Okay, so two of my winners were CLO and what am I blanking on the third one? Flamita. CLO and Flamita. I have to give credit to Rhea Fuda, and I don't like them giving credit to Rhea Fuda at this point, but like, he took advantage of his ring time. He had a really fun and strong kind of weekend between like the openers. I mean, he was not put in any sort of serious position. I mean, he's a guy under the age of 30. Like, of course not. But he really, it felt like that he was more working towards trying to prove a point. And I like the fact, especially on Sunday, I like seeing him face off against Aki and Gucci, who Aki, I feel like, has like really, since working on the roster every day, I know I made that point at the J show, but it felt even more so like this. He is really like stepped up with it, and he probably would have been like my would have been number three, but he was off one of the shows. Like, he didn't work all three shows, but I think Fuda took advantage of working all three shows and looked really good throughout the weekend.
This was not intentional. This was not planned. I would have the same winners that you did in the order of Rhea Fuda 1, Flamita 2, and LCLO 3. I would argue that I'm famously hard on Rhea Fuda, and oftentimes am not interested in praising him because I think his best work is done in the ring with either Masaki Mochizuki or Mochizuki Jr., which he was at points during this weekend. But watching Fuda on nights 1 and 3, I thought, wow, it's completely insane that he's not in a unit. I mean, he's a wrestler with flaws. He's far from a great wrestler, but he is talented enough to be on every show and to be factored into some sort of storyline. And the fact that he's not at this point feels insulting to Fuda and feels a little bit insulting to the audience.
I mean, I think Fuda's in the previous UT situation, to be fair. Like, if, I mean, he's again coming back from injury, and he's someone who's been constantly out with it. And with UT, like, he was doing great work for, it felt like, 2 years before they were actually willing to kind of put him into things. And even after he comes back to injury, they would push him back down the card with it. It is something where I think Fuda doing nothing becomes like an easy, like, extra, like, weight on the scale for things that make this weekend kind of frustrating. But if we're in the situation, if Fuda is healthy and we are in this kind of situation in August with him, that's when I'm going to be really kind of up in arms about it. I need to see consistency on him staying on the Raw, is staying off the injured list before really making any sort of pronouncements about him, but other than it was nice to see him doing well here this weekend.
I understand the point there. My counter to that is, it's not like we have five different versions of Love and Peace on the roster right now, where there are right. These completely full units that we all really enjoy. We're dealing with the corpse of D Courage. We're mm-hmm. dealing with a Paradox unit that feels completely checked out. We're dealing with the heel unit where you and I have set our piece on. There's room to have Rhea Fuda in a unit, in a new unit on this roster. And the fact that they're not doing that is a little strange to me.
Yeah. I do have to say, I did like the fact on Sunday that, like, you did have the hierarchy thing happen where in the opener, of course, UT, Gucci, and Aki, they come out to Party Anthem. You know, like, there are natural vibes with this. But since it's three unaffiliated guys, Fuda, Hamari, and Kimura, they all come out to Fuda's theme because he's technically the most senior out of the three. Mm. That did kind of make me smile for a second and make my notebook of things to bring up on the show, just as an aside.
So again, a good weekend for Fuda in particular.
Yeah.
Flamita is unreal. Just the life that he brings to this promotion.
It's like whenever he shows up, it's not a full standard deviation better, but the promotion feels better whenever Flamita is around. And it feels more like Dragon Gate, it's further like underlined. Like, I felt a little better about these shows, the fact that Flamita was on them. I really did.
Well, I guess the inverse thought is, imagine if Flamita wasn't on these shows.
Oh God, there would be nothing even remotely scratching recommendable in my mind if it wasn't for Flamita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Cielo, and you know, my eyes when these cards were announced went to Cielo as like, hey, he's in. he's in a few different matches that I think look really good here. And I'm also just intrigued by him coming out of that cage match and seemingly moving away from the Kato program, sort of what they have next in line for him. Again, you know, we're now, you know, to the day as we're recording this, a month removed from Golden Coliseum. And I'll make this point in just a second again with another wrestler that we talk about. But we're a month removed from Golden Coliseum, and there is absolutely no definitive direction for Cielo. I have no idea what he's going to do next. But I will say that I thought he kept his head above water this weekend and looked really, really good in every match that I saw of his.
Yeah, I like him teaming with Monte.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, everyone who teams with Monte looks better, I feel like. But I wonder if Cielo, and not to tie everything back in the show to Kota Minoru case, I wonder if Cielo, because Kato's kind of figured into these kinds of things because of being Ishin's tag team partner, that like it's like, okay, we're doing this face term, and then we revisit Cielo and Kato going forward after that, maybe. It's just like pause because they have to do this face turn.
Yeah, they very easily could. I mean, it's one of those programs where if they don't pick it up and revisit it anytime soon, I'm not going to be hung up on it, because I thought they got what they needed to get out of it, which was slight elevation for both guys. But yeah, in August, if we go back to a heated Cielo Kato thing that ends with their own Apuestas match, you know, I'll welcome that. I have no issue with that. But I do think this promotion, I think, is learning this, and I think we're all learning this in real time, that Cielo, despite being a bigger guy, is a little bit more interesting with the Gucci's and the UT's and the KZ's and the Dragon Kids of the world. He's a good base, and because of his interesting moveset, I think he works really well with those smaller guys. You know, he's displayed chemistry in recent events with some of those types of wrestlers, I would say more so than he ever has with Kato specifically.
Yeah, no, and I think like that is kind of the fun thing about that match with him and Mochizuki Jr. Like, I was only 3 1/4 on this match, but it was just a fun, just like, oh, we're getting a little inspired and grapply, and then Cielo kind of doing his version of the Mochizuki Jr. ass kicking with it. And it really kind of felt like that in its way, that like, we all know in the back of our mind, like, this is actually like a generational kind of match in a way. And they kind of worked it in that kind of fashion. And I feel like that's where also some of the interest with Cielo is happening, with like in these undercard stuff. Because like, in theory, if we're like being shoot trash case, and let's be shoot trash for a second here, like Nishikawa would have been in the dojo with a lot of these people that he had matches with. Maybe not the Gucci's and the Aki's, but like other people he's been up against, like he has been. And I think that it's kind of neat to see him like teaming with Fuda, because that would have been a contemporary of his, right? Even though he was immediately sent off to Mexico, in theory, I think that was like a nice little edge for people to kind of like just think about with like these, with like Cielo right now, that we get to kind of experience while he's on ice.
I would agree with that. I mean, the junior match was really entertaining because they beat the shit out of each other. You know, it was a complete detachment from the things that he was doing two nights prior with UT and Gucci. It was a different style of match that I also thought really spoke to his sensibilities. And for some reason, he and Kato never really got there where they just potatoed each other. He and Kato always, I felt like, were trying to do some weird Dragon Gate version of irresistible force versus a movable object. And I would rather them just approach the match like the junior
match. Shun influence, mm-hmm. I feel like, dripped in a little bit with like the King of Gates stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Gosh, I just turned on, just so you know, I just turned on the New Japan show from KBS Hall, and their hard camera and everything about this is like the most perverted thing that they've ever done.
I heard they're not shooting they did not shoot in the direction of the stained glass window.
No. Their hard cam is like weirdly like to the side of where no one comes out of, like from it, at least the way it looks like. And they have a Titantron right in the middle of the stained glass. Like, this is deviant behavior from Bushiroad. Kidani, do better. I just have to say that. I just had to interject with that. I apologize. But yeah,
Cielo was great. I wish he and Kato, if they were going to go back to each other, would just beat the piss out of each other like he and Junior did.
Yeah. And like, Cielo is like, the more and more like you watch him, and more you see like the crowd, like, even though like for like this kind of silent kind of character, it's really clear like it's working and it's over. And it's just like when they want to kind of figure out what to do with them or when they want to take them off ice for that. But yeah, I would say that those were like the three big winners of the weekend. Who would you have for the losers?
I would have, in order of biggest loser to third biggest loser, number three, Jackie and Rita. So I guess I'm going to go 3-1. I'm going to blow my own high spot. But number three, I would have Jackie and Rita. Number two, I would have VB Hulk. And I thought the biggest loser of the weekend, not necessarily because of his individual performance. In fact, I quite like what he did, but I don't think anybody had a worse weekend of booking than Homari did.
Yeah, so Jackie Rita, it's obvious why you would have them at three. I have to say for Hulk, like, I don't think Hulk was like bad. It just like putting him against Homari in that first night semi-main event just felt kind of mean. Because it was like him barely getting over for his Valkyrie splash, and then Homari does it immediately, and it like crystal clear, crisp and clean. And it's just like, why would you want Hulk to like look bad in front of his hometown like that? Like, that was like a really unfortunate thing that absolutely should not have happened. That match should not have gotten booked in the first place.
Completely bizarre behavior. I don't understand why they did that, and I don't understand why Hulk won. And I understand the defense of, well, it's BB Hulk's hometown. That means nothing to me. I don't care. There is zero scenario in 2026 in which BB Hulk should be pinning Homare. And that puts us in a spot now to reiterate my point with Cielo, where I'm a little bit more patient with him. We're a month removed from Golden Coliseum. Homare was the focal point of that show. I have no idea what the direction with him is. I have no idea what the character of Homari is.
His character is thumbs down now.
His character is thumbs down. I don't know if he's supposed to be despondent over his hair loss. I don't know if he's supposed to be using that as a motivator to get back to the top of the card. I don't know if he's being cycled out. I mean, I can't believe they're just kind of doing nothing. He just headlined a pay-per-view and they're doing nothing with him.
And you contrast it to the match he had with Hyo at Korakuen, and like there were like no real flashes of or the 8-man in Kyoto, like of, oh, now that he's no longer with Shun, he's going to go fly and he's going to like show what he can be as like a babyface. No, he's going around doing thumbs down to the crowd. They're giving him thumbs down back. He has a towel with him doing a thumbs down on it that's being sold, and he's booked in openers and he's booked to lose to BB Hulk on his homecoming show. Like, that's what he was up to in this weekend.
I can't tell if it's supposed to be like, okay, well, you know, he's eating his lumps, but he's going to get back there. Once his hair grows out a little bit, watch out, because Homara is going to get his revenge on the roster. I don't know if that's what they're doing or if he's just randomly losing to BB Hulk in singles matches now, because this is an issue with Hulk and this is an issue with the environment that they run shows in. It's not like, at least to me, maybe you disagree, when Homari and Hulk stared across the ring from one another when the bell rang, it wasn't to me like, oh, goddamn, Homari's wrestling BB Hulk in his hometown. This is a big match. That's not how it came across to me.
No. It felt like, oh, this is Hulk's highlighted match in his hometown, and it looks like Homari is the person who drew the straw to be in this match.
I mean, far be it for me to ever suggest Mochizuki Jr. losing, because normally I'm advocating for the opposite, but you can't do Hulk versus Jr.? Why do you have to beat Homare? What purpose does that serve? What good does that do anybody?
It does just kind of make you just shrug and go like, okay, what are I guess, are we waiting for Shun to come back to do that next up? But it felt like it was pretty clear that the two of them were like ending, and Shun was like, you fucked this up, so you have to sit in it, and I'm going away now. And like, why are we waiting around for, or at least, and looking at like what is announced for next week's Korakuens, nothing around Homari is being mentioned with it. Nothing at this point. So he's going to be card filler, essentially, it feels like, unless he gets kind of put in a situation to go out there and to have a February 2017 Takahiro Yamamura versus Big Boss Shimizu match out of nowhere. Like, unless we're like, have, if they're trying to do that in order to like just lull us into, okay, no, Homari is a phenom, like the phenom that we know he is, I don't know what they're doing, because like that's me grasping at straws, basically hoping that they're just trying to intentionally make us think that he's back to being a second year wrestler.
I don't get it. I'm I'm a little blown away by the fact that, you know, it's fine. Whatever they want to do, it's fine. Just pick a direction. But we're a month removed from going to Coliseum, and I don't understand what they're trying to do with him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Because there's
that.
A chance I missed something, but you don't feel like he has a defined character at this point, do you?
No. I was more just memeing, saying thumbs down. Because that's
I know what you're saying there, but it's like, you know, I don't know. Shun Skywalker having an injured ankle shouldn't put Homari's career on hold.
That's why I'm wondering and grasping at straws and wondering if we're getting February 2017. Like, he's going to, like,
who's the opponent?
I mean, Junior?
No, they don't.
I mean, they wouldn't push Junior.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that. In February 2017, that's what I don't know. There was a 20-minute Yamamura Shimizu time limit draw on the undercard that was the massive coming out party for both of those guys, and then they just happened to also be inserted into the main event that night. And, you know, I would say, especially in the case of Yamamura, his career was never the same for a positive. Shimizu was ebbed and flowed his entire career. But I mean, it would be, I think Kimura would be the guy, because I love Kimura. I want them to do something with him desperately, but I don't think they're going to do that. And I don't, it's, again, it's not like he's bursting at the seams.
No.
Like, oh, we're one Homari match away from being back in business. I don't think they want to do anything with him right now. Like, that
then,
to me, is the crazy thing, is that
even, you know,
if
where my direction goes with that.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going, are they beating him down, having him be in this funk before he says, I need to go do training elsewhere and go on excursion? Because that,
yeah, I'm still
not
there. I know that's something that you think is likely. I do not. I don't think they can afford to get rid of him, because the guy, for
I'm just trying to read
tea release
here. No, I'm with you on this. Like, that's not what I would do with this. Like, I think Homari is he's already at a point where he doesn't really kind of need, like, that kind of break with this. I'm just trying to read the tea leaves. I'm trying to make sense of this as much as you are, buddy. And this is real befuddling. So I'm going to do I wouldn't call this a stock down, but this was definitely, for the thing that the shows were kind of promoted as, at least from the network, as what was being booked on the shows, I don't know if we really got the best out of the situations for Dai, Tsujiguchi, and Koki Oshima with this. Like, Dai, Tsujiguchi had a exhibition match on Friday the 22nd. Koki Oshima had one against KZ, so that was KZ on the 23rd, and then the two of them tagged against Jackie Rita in an exhibition on the 24th. And I don't know, like, these guys have been around forever in the dojo. Like, Oshima only, like, up until when they appeared at Korakuen, and it felt like the only time Oshima ever comes out of the woodwork other than ring boy duty was whenever they were in Hokkaido, because he's from Sapporo. I was really, really hoping that, like, we would get some just real piss and vinegar, like, rookies versus veterans, and just really see these two kids, like, really, like, get their asses kicked, but in the way be like, okay, you all showed a level of scrap. Well, we're going to do a trial series now, and then, like, kick off a trial series there. But what just happened afterwards, after the tag match, was Ryo Saito grabbing a microphone and saying, like, I don't think we're there yet. And I think after those matches that we saw, I don't think they're necessarily there yet. And at least in Dai Tsujiguchi's case, he doesn't necessarily feel like a Dragon Gate wrestler in some ways, at least to me. I know you were
on that with me. I mean, explain that to the people that weren't in our DMs this week. What's your thought process there?
So Dai Tsujiguchi had his match against Susumu Yokosuka, and Susumu Yokosuka just tore through the kid. And the thing about Dai Tsujiguchi is that he's a little bit taller, and he is a more beefy kind of guy. I don't feel like he has, like, the snap or the timing of it. And maybe it is that I've watched a lot of, like, Best of the Super Juniors and stuff like this. So I've seen, like, New Japan dojo guys. Like, he feels more like a Noge dojo guy to me than someone from Kobe.
I think it's way too early to tell. I can't make that assessment yet.
But I mean, these two guys have been around forever, though. And we've seen them in future matches, like, dating back to, like, late 2024 at this point.
It's odd. I found the whole treatment of what they were doing on these shows to be odd, to have them be exhibition matches at intermission, no less. I found the whole thing to be a little strange, but I'm always open to new wrestlers. Yeah, one of KZ's hometown matches was odd. The Jackie Rita thing was odd. I mean, the match was fun. All the matches were fun, but
You
know, I have no read on them yet, and I think it's a little odd that they're being portrayed as losers before they've debuted based on the promo segments of the Rio Saito. I think that's really strange, but, you know, what can you do? The least of this promotion's issues right now.
It just was like a weird feeling to me. Like, I remember when Yoshiki Kato like beat Pancho Managa in an exhibition match and everyone was like, oh shit, okay. Mm. and suddenly he became like a rookie with Buzz on his debut match the next month. Like, I don't understand like the long-term kind of play for this, and maybe this is one of those things that I'm too in the moment with this, but like the usage of KZ and Hulk on their homecoming shows might be a stock down kind of thing for me, because it just felt like, why are you using KZ in this thing with a guy that you've tried countless times and he does not seem ready?
As we round third on this episode, Mike, I am not watching any of the Best of the Super Juniors with Hyo in it. You have. What can you tell me about what's going on there?
So Hyo has had four matches so far in Best of the Super Juniors. He's at 4 points. I'm going to run through my notes real quick for all four matches. It's not going to take too long for this case. He is 2-2. He's had matches against Hyo on the 14th, Daisuke Sasaki on the 17th, El Desperado on the 20th, and Kushida on the 23rd. Case, let's play a little game right here. Two of those matches were good work performances. Two of those matches were shtick fests. Take a guess. Who were those?
Give me the four names again.
Hyo, Daisuke Sasaki, El Desperado, and Kushida.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with the good being El Desperado and Kushida.
So that was kind of a trick thing. Kushida was both good and a whole lot of shtick. Hyo was a shtick fest. Hyo won in 3 minutes with the Samson driver. It was all a character work. Daisuke Sasaki was more of Daisuke Sasaki's character, and it was more of a work kind of thing. It was kind of okay. I got time with it. El Desperado was just a plain work match. I think that was the best match he's had so far. It was grounded. It was worked around the knee. With that, I went 3.5 on it. The Kushida match was frustrating for me because, Case, you know who actually is the main character of Hyo in Best of the Super Juniors?
It's the stuffed animal that he's got, right?
Yeah, and it's miles more stuffed animal stuff than he ever does in Dragon Gate.
Yeah, that's...
Any
Hyo clip I've seen has been with the stuffed animal, and that has not made me want to watch any of it.
Yeah, so like Kushida match, like the Kushida match was Kushida being pissed off about it being like a stuffed animal match, and then there was the stuff, and it became like a stuffed animal match, and Hyo sold a whole lot. Like Hyo was getting picked apart in these matches, but El Desperado match is worth kind of going out of your way for. Hyo is sickeningly over as we expected, but like I'm still looking forward to the Taiji Ishimori match, as like really hoping for him to really get that time here for it. We're now in the split block nights, so there's not as much of just compressed stuff on it, but it's about what we expect, I would say. But the Kushida
match,
does
he come across like a major league wrestler or like a minor league wrestler doing a tour for New Japan?
No, he comes across like a star.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's going through the crowd. There's a ton of Hyo t-shirts and crowd signs and all of that. Like, is it shticky? Is it like 25 to 50% more shtick than he does in Dragon Gate? Yes. Is it working for this audience? Yes. Is it the kind of output that I'm not saying this to like do like a jab at him, but is this the kind of output that would have people like Joe Lanza shaking their head? Absolutely yes. So it's exactly what we expected.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing. I would have liked for him to have not leaned onto the stuffed animal stuff so much more, as much as he is. There was a time in New Japan in which that would have absolutely not happened. Somehow New Japan has become the default promotion for things like that to happen. So I don't know if there's any really good Hyo matches, shoot me a message, but I'm a little checked out on that, which is disappointing. But I don't have the patience for stuffed animal wrestling.
Yeah, I would really go for the El Desperado match so far as the thing I would have watched from it. He has show tomorrow, which is just sound ungodly. Robbie Eagles is pretty strongly booked, and I think he's going to win the block, but Hio could play kind of spoiler against him. And then the last match night, I think he still has, I don't know when his match against Taiji is. Okay, so he has both Taiji and Robbie Eagles and Corkin. So those are pretty high hopes for those two, at least.
There you go.
But Case, unless there's anything else I'm forgetting, I think that's going to hit it for, that's going to take care of it for this week for Open the Voice Gate. They have not yet posted the card yet for this upcoming weekend's network show in Kobe Sambo Hall that's coming up on the 31st. Nothing announced. I just checked just to see, but we'll be back next week to talk about that. And then also 30 Under 30 we'll have wrapped up, and we'll talk about our list and our thoughts about 30 Under 30 in general. But Case, I think it's going to do it for us this week. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case at underscore in your case on Twitter. I'm at Fujihaya with two eyes like Don Fuji on Twitter. The Voices of Wrestling Discord is also a great place to discuss Dragon Gate, the Dragon Gate channel that we talked about earlier. Everyone's trying to make sense of what Kobe World 2026 might end up being, but also there's the Open the Voice Gate channel as well. That's where we have all of the match listings for all of our historical content. Whenever there's like a programming note, it goes there as well, and that's on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. And that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back with you next time. Take care, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.